Welcome to the Darien cast. I'm Darien. That gentleman over there with the incredibly sexy mustache is Steven.
Hey.
We're coming to you once again about all the latest exciting happenings in video games and all of the exciting happenings back in the SNES versus Genesis market segment. And I know Steven had a few things to say that he was talking to me about earlier, so why don't you get the ball rolling on that one?
Well, I think the real question is, which is a better game, Sonic the Hedgehog or Super Mario World? Because that really is a thing. I think we'll save that for later.
That's a good thing to end with, I think.
Everyone really wants to know that. But, I guess start with some stuff I've been playing lately. Remember how the last time we recorded this, I was listening to the last episode not too long ago, I was like, yeah, that whole Arbiter's in that World of Warcraft thing, he's trying to get me hooked on it. I think the day after, or maybe 3 days after that recording, I installed World of Warcraft again and have just been hooked on it and getting caught up to where Darien and everyone else is. But I was talking about how, man, Super Mario Galaxy is like the greatest game ever. Yeah, I haven't played it since. Out of World of Warcraft. It sucks up all my available playtime. But actually, what I was playing, because I don't really think we need to talk about World of Warcraft. Everyone knows about it.
I think quite a bit of that already.
Yeah, I have been playing Pirates of the Burning Sea, which is another MMO that came out earlier this year. It was seemed like it had been in development forever. And it is a fairly realistic portrayal of naval life in the 1720s. You can go ahead and play either French, British, Spanish, or pirate, because I guess pirate is now a nationality in the strange alternate history world that Pirates of the Burning Sea takes place in. And you can basically, if you're not playing a pirate, well, if you're playing a pirate, basically the profession open to you is pirate. But
that seems to make some sense.
Yeah. But if you're playing a member of the other nationalities, you can basically play yourself a privateer, who's sort of the 18th century version of a mercenary. Well, let's put it that way. Dudes who just go out and make war for profit.
They're basically pirates with a government charter.
Exactly right. Though we really should make a little clear those days. The difference between government-sanctioned naval combat and piracy were... Well, it was like kind of one and the same, except for the government-sanctioned thing.
Yep.
You can also play yourself a member of one of the various navies of the nations, and then also a merchant, or a free trader, as they call it, in which case you, I guess, kind of like run around trying not to get sunk and transporting goods from one location to another. Anyway, I'm a little bit of a fan of the era. I kind of prefer the Napoleonic era more than the middle, early 1700s, but it's pretty close to one another. And I like the Age of Fighting Sail, and I enjoy the fact that in the Pirates of the Burning Sea, the sea battles are very, very lengthy, and they're hard, and you have to spend a lot of time trying to worry about where the wind is and how well your ship handles, and you plan your maneuvers very, very carefully, because if all of a sudden you find yourself having to tack sharply into the wind and you're not all set up for it, you can be just totally obliterated. And so in that respect, the game I thought was really, really interesting. I really, really enjoyed the naval combat. It was challenging, almost maybe a little too challenging, though. The game doesn't really ever explain to you precisely how to sail. It doesn't really tell you how your ship handles. There's some stuff you can do to get some better ideas of it, but the game kind of expects it. You already know a fair amount about sailing, and if you can't sail, there's literally no sailing tutorial. There's a little bit of a combat tutorial, but at no point in time does it tell you, hey, you know, this ship doesn't actually sail best running completely with the wind. You actually kind of want to run, you know, a little bit off to the wind, which is normal, actually, for those sorts of sailing ships. You don't want to run the wind directly at your back. There's no real telling you any of that stuff. So I don't know. What were your impressions of it? You played a little bit too, Darien.
I did. I didn't play it much because I installed it and then it took like 6 weeks for Sony to remember how to send me my password, and then I got into the game and I played it for an hour or so. I did all the tutorials at the beginning, made my character, and the main impression that I got of it was that as you say, sailing is really, really hard, and it's very confusing. Even if you do know, I mean, I'm not a sailing expert, but I know a bit about it, but even knowing a bit about sailing doesn't prepare me very well for the sailing controls in the game, which are sort of strange.
Yeah, they're very strange.
And as you mentioned to me a while ago, it doesn't default to showing you anything about the direction the wind is blowing. You have to, enable that, and I never figured out how.
They're actually... Oh, it's the backslash key, of course. What do you mean, you didn't know that immediately?
Backslash wind direction. They just go together.
It actually does display the wind... Much of the things in the game is available, just kind of hidden. It does display the wind direction in your compass by default, but it's not obvious unless you're really looking for it. And there's a way you can kind of get it to see it, you can see both the wind direction as well as how your ship handles at various points. Sort of a little circle around your ship. So you can know, the wind is here, I need to be pointing this direction to get my best speed. You can turn that on by pressing backslash. But yeah, the game will never tell you that. I was reading on the forums and had that. If you turn on the wind circle, I'm like, oh, well, that cause I spent a lot of time trying to figure, because I know a little bit about sailing, and I knew, different ships sail differently. They sail better at different points, and I knew this game modeled that, but I couldn't figure out any way for the damn game to tell me how my ship handled precisely until I turned on the wind circle, and of course, backslash. Why that's not on by default is a real mystery.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to play well without that.
I completely agree. I've spent the tutorial battle where you have to fight the two ships that are attacking your ship, and I spent the first 5 minutes that I was playing this battle just completely sailing at random trying to figure out how to control. And then the naval combat's a little weird too, because it takes a while, or it took me a while at least, to figure out how that shot timer worked that's on the screen that tells you when you can shoot, because it wasn't obvious to me anyway. And so I'm just I'd sail up alongside one of the enemy ships, and I'd hit the shoot button, and nothing would fire. And so I just pounded a few more times, and then nothing would fire, and then it seems to me that, several seconds later, it would just shoot at random without me pressing the button. And I didn't realize for a while that when you press the shoot button, it cues up a shot the next time you have a cannon free. And so that was a little strange, too.
Yeah, that is weird. And the other thing is... unless you're really paying attention to the firing arcs on your compass, once again, and true to reality, but not intuitive as a gamer, your firing arc is probably not what you expect it to be, so there can be all sorts of things where just looking at your ship versus the other ship, it looks like you should be able to hit them, but you can't, and if you press the fire button, then nothing will happen. Even though your gun is loaded and ready to go, you just not actually have a clear shot on them. So you have to really look at the firing arc on the compass. The other thing is the sailing controls are very strange, because it kind of plays a little bit like the standard WASD for movement. W raises your sails, so that kind of moves forward. S lowers them, so that's kind of like moving backwards, but not really. And then A and D give you a little rudder to help you turn. But the weird thing is you're not really supposed to use A and D to turn, but of course that's what you instinctively do when you're playing a video game, and... the problem is really there's much, much better ways to turn, but those ways are not in the manual or in the tutorial. Those are on the forums as well.
Excellent.
Actually, it turns out that pretty much the game involves looking at a compass the whole time. So you can actually click on a compass bearing to turn automatically, so you're then pointing in that bearing, which actually is far and away the best way to turn, from what I understand from my experience with this as well. But again, the controls are not intuitive. Yeah, but I'll tell you what really, really got me about Pirates of the Burning Sea is there's the battles, especially early on, even, I'm level 10 of 50 or something, and they're very difficult, they're very lengthy, and very involved, to the point where it would make sense if these were missions in a single-player campaign, and maybe I could save, but when you're playing an MMO... and you're spending 40 minutes in an encounter, and you lose, and you just have to do it again, it's very, very frustrating. Especially when, in this game, you're constantly spending consumables. Every shot you fire, that shot you have to buy. You have to regularly make repairs to your ship. That costs money. And then I lost a battle just because I was being I guess just, you know, I've been kind of noobish and couldn't quite figure out how best to attack this French ship that had me outgunned, and I, you know, it was about a half an hour of my time, and I thought I had beat it and just got sunk. And okay, I mean, half, but, you know, you lose also your unsecured cargo, which is a little bit of a penalty, especially when you're new. I was like, I had some quest items I'd been collecting, and I just lost all those, and that was really frustrating. And then, so I got another mission, and it's like one of the big story missions in the game, and I'm doing it, and I'm doing it, and it's like me and a whole British squadron, or like four other or five other NPC ships versus two French squadrons, right? So it's me plus four or five NPCs against like six or seven other NPCs. And I'm aided by this big flagship, you know, this big like ship of the line, or maybe a little smaller, but a frigate. With, you know, 30-some guns to my 10, and he's on my side, and we're whooping it, right? I'm like, I'm plowing through the smaller ships, he's kicking ass. You know, most of our squadron gets defeated, but it's just the two of us versus two French ships. Both the French ships have me way outgunned, but I'm more maneuverable than them, and I got my big ol' 36-gun guy by my side. And then at some point, he just stops. He just sails straight into an island, and then stopped doing anything else. The NPC just bugged out and decided to do nothing. And, you know, if that happens in World of Warcraft, you say, oh, that's a pain. You know, page a GM or whatever, reset the quest, do it again, because you just lost 5 minutes. I had just lost 40 minutes of my time, plus an insane amount of my consumables, and here I am getting sunk by two French ships. Even though I did nothing wrong, I had played, in fact, perfectly. I'd done a very good job. I was very happy with how I had performed. Yeah, I just bugged out, and I realized I was never going to play the goddamn game again. Because I just really can't handle that. It's just way too frustrating. Like, in a regular game, you know, you can mitigate that by saving frequently. Okay, if it gets buggy, you go back 10 minutes, whatever. But losing 30 or 40 minutes of progress and having, like, and realizing you're just at the mercy of the buggy NPCs is just infuriating.
Yeah.
So I've been angry and haven't played it since.
One of the things about that game that really got me is that it seemed to have like two separate sides to itself. Like it had this one identity where it wanted to be this naval combat simulation, and then it also wanted to be World of Warcraft.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
And they just didn't seem to fit together very well.
We should mention how weird and poor the land-based combat, I don't know if land-based, but the sort of melee combat where you're fencing.
Yeah.
It's just really, really, it's like playing a really crappy warrior in World of Warcraft. You have this sort of, like, I don't know, like a cross between a warrior and rogue. You have like this sort of energy, rage, hybrid bar, and you kind of just spam some attacks until you build enough energy to do a better attack. And it feels really sluggish and poor, and you have some stupid NPCs that fight with you and just randomly a bunch of chaos. And terrible. The fencing is just god-awful. So you can, like, board ships or sink them, and I quickly decided I'm just going to sink everything because I don't have to do the fencing. Except for some of the missions which require you to, and that's frustrating too, because you need to go press 4 or 6 times until 5 lights up and you can press save.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
That's a pretty high quality mechanic right there. I always like to press one button until a different button lights up, then press that.
Yeah, you know, it's possible there was some more depth to it, but I didn't really enjoy it and wasn't interested in figuring it out.
What I always did in the fencing combat was just I found the one that was labeled a basic attack that doesn't
yeah.
Like you involve the focus and balance systems at all and just does damage right now, and I just pressed that a lot. And that pretty much got the job done.
Yeah, I suppose that might have worked too. So I was trying to like actually kind of do the whole set up preparatory attacks and get yourself the whatever they call it, focus or whatever, and then do the special finishing moves, and
yeah.
I that seemed also to work. The whole fencing seemed really tacked on versus the amount of thought that's going to go into the rest of the game. So yeah. I got a feeling like they didn't really spend too much time on it either.
Also, I was a little annoyed coming into this game because what I wanted was just to be a trader. I mean, I rolled a free trader. I wanted to sail around and, you know, open new trade routes and establish some massive commercial empire and make a lot of money. That was what I wanted to do. And I get in, and immediately I'm fighting pirates, which is fine. I get the need for a tutorial on how to fight them. That's not a problem. But then I start, like, raising levels and getting talents and things, and I'm like, am I going to have to, like, power level my character to level whatever before I can go sail around and trade? Because I'm probably not going to do that.
Yeah, that seems weird, too. Honestly, I'm not sure the game really needed to be an RPG leveling system.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it would have been better if they just stuck with the naval simulation and the trading and all that, and not put on the fantasy game talents and level ups and so on and so forth.
Yeah, honestly, I played both a naval officer and a little bit of a free trader, and it makes much more sense for the naval officer, the talents and stuff, and the skills. Works a lot better there, because you are doing more combat.
Yeah,
but, like,
no doubt.
The trader stuff, like, all of a sudden now you get, like, discounts in enemy ports. Or what? That's just weird. It doesn't really make a ton of sense, and it doesn't fit the theme. And then also the other really annoying thing as a trader is almost all the missions are overwhelmingly combat-focused.
Yeah.
Like, there's a sort of main storyline that runs through it that gives you all sorts of stuff. And that's, like, all... It's the same. The storyline is exactly the same, but the treasure map and the Templars and all that, it's the same regardless whether you're a trader or a naval officer. So, huh. Not really sure why.
Yeah. It seems very strange. And especially when you consider that this is... You know, there's this whole big setup about capturing enemy ports, and if you occupy this thing for so long, oh, you know, you can take it over, and... Then they put in this weird treasure map thing that doesn't really seem to have anything to do with the game that they put it in. It's like they figured they couldn't sell this unless they made it a lot more like Pirates of the Caribbean, right?
Yeah, but then the weird thing is, if you're just a dude who likes Pirates of the Caribbean, you're going to hate this game.
Exactly.
It's slow and methodical.
And you've got to deal with all this damn naval combat that's going to take you forever.
Yeah, I mean, you have to really be interested in historical naval combat. I was kind of upset when I saw, here's some Templar treasure map. Like, what the hell is this doing here? But then the sort of naval officer storyline would be much happier, where it was, you know, me working my way up, and I'm acting lieutenant, and trying to get my first command. That all seemed much better. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think they made some concessions, and I think the fencing is part of that, to try and kind of appeal to a little bit more of a casual crowd. But it just... it feels like a weird mix. Because ultimately, it's not at all a casual game.
Yeah, it's very... As you say, you have... Everything's consumable-based. And even in the introductory mission, when you're just sailing around fighting these two ships that basically don't do any damage to you, so you can figure out how to run the controls, you have, like, four different kinds of cannonball.
Yeah.
And the game doesn't at any point tell you what the differences among these cannonballs are. You pretty much have to read the tooltips and see if you can make sense out of what it's saying, and then try firing all of them. And I kind of liked having that available, but it's a really intimidating amount of micromanagement to throw at somebody in the tutorial.
Well, again, I think it almost just sort of expects, what, you don't know the difference between grape and canister shot, really?
Pretty much.
I do. So if you don't, well, the game, I don't know, the game, it's just that the game should not really for people unless they're willing to bone up on their Age of Sail mechanics. And I kind of like that there's a game like that, but I don't know, it's a little too hardcore for me, and I like the historical simulation stuff, but I dislike the part where it seems like you really got to play it a lot and really be into it and can't. I was looking, foolish me, I was kind of looking for a game that I could play when I was a little tired of WoW, you know, want to take a break. Mm-hmm. No, this is not a kind of a game that I can just kind of play for an hour or two at all. So that might be part of my problem. So if you are looking, hey, if you are a big Horatio Hornblower or Jack Aubrey fan, you need to, you got a lot of time to spend, then maybe this is the game for you, but otherwise, and you got a lot of patience to deal with the freaking goddamn bugs. I'm still angry about that, because I was so into it, I was so happy with how well I was doing, and then the guy just stopped doing anything and I lost. So, yeah, you been playing anything else lately?
Lately I was playing Professor Layton in the Curious Village on the DS.
Okay, yeah, I have also played that.
I bought that a while ago. Every time I've been in a video game store in forever, I've kind of picked it up and looked at it and been like, I wonder if that's any good, you know, maybe I should get it. And then ultimately I'm like, I don't know, it's kind of adventure gamey, I don't really like adventure games, so I put it down. But I finally just said, screw it, I'll try it. It's the only way I'm ever going to find out for sure. And it's actually pretty good. I'm a big fan of brain teasers as a rule, and it doesn't fall into a whole lot of the typical adventure game cliches that I can't stand, where you have to get the cat hair on the masking tape and the maple syrup packet so you can make the mustache so you can impersonate a man who doesn't have a mustache. It's just, get all these queens on this chessboard. And then you win that, and then you gotta figure out how to get 5 quarts of water in the pitcher. Typical brain teaser stuff.
Now, see, I'm actually really surprised that you liked the Flayton, because I was really into it. I thought, this is a game Darian would hate, because this game is nothing but, in essence, mini-games. There is no real game. There's just this collection of completely unrelated little challenges, and it just seemed like the sort of thing that Darian would despise. So I'm really surprised that you were that into it.
Well, I don't have a problem with things like that. In principle, I have a problem when I get, a Mario game. I get a game that's about running and jumping over holes, but then, halfway through, I have to complete some sort of crazy skateboarding challenge before I can get back to the game I was playing. That's when it annoys me. If I buy a game that says right on the box, this is a whole bunch of little mini, like the WarioWare games, this is a whole bunch of little mini games, it's not going to upset me when that's what I get,
I see. So I thought you were just opposed to the whole constantly switching little tasks. You wanted a full game. No, you just don't like the mini games inside of a larger context.
Right. I don't like the kind of mini game that interrupts the game experience and changes it to something else.
Sure. Although I think also probably part of your frustration is that those mini games are just about universally horrible.
That certainly doesn't help.
Like most of the mini games inside of a Mario game is not a game that you would ever, ever, ever play by itself. Like if I just handed you whatever, Final Fantasy VII snowboard racing and said, here, you want to play this for 10 minutes? You'd be like, hell no, I do not. I will play Solitaire instead.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And that goes double for Final Fantasy VIII's fucking card game.
I will say that again, the only time I ever had fun with Final Fantasy VIII was when I was playing the Japanese version, and I don't speak any Japanese, and I reverse engineered the card game rules by just trial and error and trying to figure out how the damn game worked. But then once I understood the game, I was like, well, this game is pretty stupid.
Yeah, the only time I ever had fun with Final Fantasy VIII was...
Yeah.
Well, actually, writing my comedy review of it was pretty good. That was kind of fun.
That's the cool thing about Layton, is, that art style is something else. I really, really dig it.
I like that. Sort of Victorian anime. It was just peculiar.
I'd like to see more games. And I love the hand-drawn look in video games. I don't know why more games don't look like that.
Yeah, I agree. It's one thing that I really liked about... Not to jump back on track, but it's one thing I liked about Final Fantasy IX. Is that the backgrounds just looked meticulously hand-drawn, and I really enjoyed it. It was really nice to look at.
Yeah, I remember when I was like a kid playing the Super Nintendo or whatever, and thinking, man, someday they're gonna be able to make games that look just like cartoons. And now they can, but they don't.
I know.
It's so frustrating to me. Instead, I get some crappy, polygon, blocky-looking human who doesn't really look like a human at all, but is disturbingly close to humanoid, and it just makes you think, oh, what the hell?
Uncanny Valley.
And that's just all we get ever. But nice. Hand-drawn, fluid animation, we accept that. It's stylistic, it's cool, but no, we get pretty much the exact same look for every game ever. And then, of course, your blocky polygon man has to go in the sewers.
To fight rats.
Yeah.
Gotta fight the rats and get the key.
God, what the hell is wrong with you, video game designers? You can make anything you want, any world at all. You're not limited by anything, and all you ever give us is sewers, rats, and keys.
I played goddamn Star Wars Galaxies, and you'd think this is Star Wars, right? I'm on this giant rebel frigate out in space, and I'm talking to Han Solo and Chewbacca, and they give me my mission to go down into the tunnels at the base of the ship and fight these, Tatooine rats. It was the most disillusioning moment of my entire career. I like you can't even get away from the rats in the sewers quest in a fucking Star Wars game.
I remember I was so hyped for Galaxies. I was following its development very, very closely, and I was really, really, it sounded really cool. And then they announced that they were cutting vehicles of any sort from launch. You couldn't own a single vehicle, and I was all hyped to be a smuggler. And when I realized I was going to have to smuggle my goods on the goddamn bus, I realized I was not playing that game. And I've never played Galaxies, and I don't intend to.
Well, from my experience, it was probably better before they put vehicles in, because the spaceship controls are just bizarre.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. But, like, you couldn't even get, like, a land speeder or something. It was, like, literally, I remember the press release when they announced it, and they were trying to spin it. Like, no, but we'll have public transportation between zones. So, and I was like, what the fuck? Public transportation? This is Star Wars! Luke never hopped on the tram to get to Mos Eisley. He had a land speeder.
I don't know. Didn't he bum a ride from Obi-Wan, or did Obi-Wan bum a ride from him?
Yeah, no, he had that land speeder of his uncle's, okay. I think. Look, I don't know. I'm not that huge a Star Wars fan, but there was some sort of little hover car thing that people rode around in.
The thing I can say for Star Wars Galaxies that was absolutely perfect about it.
Yeah.
At least when I played it, I don't know, maybe we've changed it since then. But I roll my character, right, and I start out, and I start out in a holding cell on the Death Star. And Han Solo and Chewbacca come and break you out of prison, and then you have to escape from Darth Vader. And that's exactly the right way to start a Star Wars RPG. You know?
Yeah, that. I mean, yeah, I guess. On the other hand, it's kind of like, I don't know. Yeah, I guess those post-vehicles, that was when they did the whole, we're going to give people what they want from a Star Wars game kind of thing.
Yeah.
After the original thing, where it's more of a realistic take on the Star Wars universe, if everyone rode the bus.
Yeah, it was definitely.
I think this at some point. Here's fucking Han Solo, bitches.
Pretty much, it's sort of a you are the big hero, and here you know are these major Star Wars characters specifically here to help you. You know, to make you feel good about yourself. And frankly, it's a lot more entertaining than starting out in the middle of the damn desert on some planet. And you have to go fight desert rats so you can get the key to the chest with the water in it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I get that. I just think that's why it's hard to do a Star Wars RPG. Because everyone wants to hang out with Han Solo, but you can't really do it. World of Warcraft does a pretty good job of it. I guess because, you know, people who are Warcraft fans aren't like, oh my gosh, I need to see Thrall immediately. you know, it isn't quite the same thing. But, you know, you get to interact with the major NPCs in World of Warcraft, but you're not tagging along with them constantly.
Yeah. I'm a little underwhelmed with the level of NPC interaction in World of Warcraft. It's like they just kind of stand around and don't do anything, and then you go fight rats.
They tell you things. I mean, they kind of talk at you sometimes.
Yeah, but not the significant ones, by and large, don't really do much. They just stand there, and probably when you get to level 60, you'll get some big quest that ends in going to talk to one of them. And that's about it.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not like the lesser NPCs do much more in World of Warcraft. Like you say, generally speaking, NPCs just kind of stand there. And every now and then you have to escort one as they walk slowly towards some goal.
Or sometimes they walk slowly in a big zigzag so they can attract as many mobs as possible on the way to the goal.
That's fun. And
those
then
are
the horde comes and gank you.
Gotta love the horde, huh?
No.
That's very true.
I don't.
That is very, very true.
Well, Blizz loves them. But, so switching topics here, unless you want to talk more about WoW, but I don't think anyone really needs that.
No, I'm all set.
So I got a little bit of an issue. Since last time we talked, you put up your Portal review, and I maybe I'm just misunderstanding exactly what you're saying here, but you kind of slam it a little bit. I mean, you give it a good review and a strong rating, 4 out of 5, but I think maybe it take, maybe not the game, but some of the reviewers and the positive hype to task. And you say that, well, everyone, this is a really good, interesting game, but everyone overlooked the big problem, which is it's short and it's easy, and has almost no replay value, which I agree with those three things. I just don't necessarily think those are bad. I mean, I think Portal is kind of the game it set out to be. It didn't intend to be long or difficult, and you know, the 4 hours that you get out of it or whatever, that's a really fun time, and I was happy with it, and I enjoyed pretty much every bit of it, so I'm not sure why that's necessarily an attraction. I'm interested in hearing your
Well,
explanation.
I did mention all those three things. I didn't hold all of them against it as such.
I see.
I thought they were all important to mention. People need to know these things. You know, you might feel ripped off if you expected a big long game and got one that's 3 hours long. But as long as you know what you're getting into, I don't think that being short and lacking in replay value is really a drawback, but I did think that the lack of challenge really was. Because once you've... I mean, at the beginning, you have all these weird little things to do, and you're figuring a bunch of stuff out, and that's cool. But once you've figured out what to do, the game doesn't really... It doesn't really escalate that. It doesn't really make you do anything difficult. It just... You do the same things again and again. And so once you've learned the basic controls and the basic fundamentals of interacting with the world, you could pretty much just nap through the rest of it and still win. And that...
Well, see, this might be one of the reasons why it's difficult to talk about difficulty in review, because god damn it if Chamber 18 didn't kill my head trying to figure out how to do it.
Really?
Yes. I don't know the only one. I talked to a couple other people at work who also got just completely stuck in 18, which is the second to last chamber, and it's...
Which part of it? The beginning part where you're going from ledge to ledge up the shaft, or...
Oh, man, I got stuck a couple places in it, too. Also, you gotta make your way across that large pit, and there's the moving platforms, right? And then, also there was, I'm sure I remember the exact details, but getting back out was a real weirdness, right? There's a button you press, and you have to get back, but you have to, like...
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spoil it necessarily, but you have to do some weird stuff by raising a door and lowering it or something like that because it blocks you. I don't know, man. I got stuck and hard for about probably a good 30, 40 minutes in that room.
I personally, my experience with it, I bought it, installed it. Once it was installed, I just sat down and I cleared it in less than 3 hours in one sitting. And... never got stuck for longer than, 4 or 5 minutes at any part in the whole time.
Well, okay, Dr. Smarty Pants.
Oh, but, yeah, that's right.
Some of us mortals, I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of the... It's hard to say how difficult a game is sometimes, because our own skill and quality,
That's true.
And hey, man, I play FPS on hard, you play on easy, so... How do you like them apples?
Whoa, I think I just got served.
Yeah, but I got stuck for 40 minutes in a room. It took you 5 to figure out in Portal. So that's just sort of different personality types. But does being easy... Is easy really in and of itself a bad thing if the game is not trying to be overly difficult?
I think it is. Because... Well, okay, but first of all, we really have to be a little bit more clear about what we mean by easy.
Mm-hmm.
If a game, for example, let's look at Super Mario Galaxy, since we talked about that earlier. Super Mario Galaxy's pretty easy when you get right down to it. I mean, it has some stuff that's dead tough, but it's not a game that I would expect the majority of the audience to be unable to beat. Let's put it that way.
Sure. Well, I guess maybe when Galaxy, it's a little, just getting the minimum number of, just doing sort of the minimum that you have to do to get the winning cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause certainly getting it with everything is quite a bit more difficult.
It is, but even then it's not. It's not as hard as it was in Super Mario 64, that's for damn sure.
Okay, fair enough.
But that's...
Or Super Mario World, or...
Yeah. But that's okay, I think, because it's still... The challenge is still there. It's still... There's some stuff you're going to have to practice. There's some stuff you're going to have to work on. You're going to have to think through. You're going to have to try a few times. But in a game like Portal, when it's pretty much all stuff that you can just wander on through, that's kind of too little challenge, I think. It's not that I wanted the game to be, like, dead hard, like, totally Ikaruga impossible hard, like, getting through Gauntlet on 1/4 hard, but, maybe something a little bit more than what we got would have been good. Because as it stands, the thing that I found the most challenging about the whole game was that it didn't tell you what the hell the portal funnel setting did. And so I didn't know I was supposed to turn it on. And so all those puzzles where you have to, like, throw yourself through two portals to get over something, I had a hell of a time aiming into the one portal.
Wait, what's a portal funnel?
In your options, there's a setting called portal funnel that if you're going toward a portal and you're faced at it, it'll sort of bump you into it to make it easier to hit them when you're launching.
Huh.
But it doesn't tell you that. There's no documentation of that feature.
I don't know. I played the 360 version. I don't know if that feature's in it. I don't remember seeing it.
That I can't say. I can only speak for the PC version. But it's definitely there, and it defaults to off, and it didn't tell me I was supposed to turn it on.
Weird. But, yeah, I mean, the game's not tremendously difficult. I think you did it in 3 hours. I did it in, like, 5. So, you know, obviously it was... I guess in terms of total amount of, you know, percentage of time, I took considerably longer than you did. But, you know, I wouldn't say it was... I got stuck in room 18, and really nowhere else did I get stuck very badly. I think I had a harder go of it than you did. But, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I was entertained the whole time. Never did feel bored. Like, I was just... You know, like, you play a game with invincibility on. You go play Final Fight, make yourself invincible, and see how interesting the game is. Well, I mean, the cinematics still make Final Fight interesting. But, you know what I mean here.
I know
Portal,
what you mean.
On the other hand, I felt engaged the whole time, even if sometimes it was a little obvious what you had to do. There was still a little bit of thought in even the easier settings.
I can get behind that. It was still very entertaining the whole time I played it, and as such, I mean, I did still give it a very good score. I mean, I'm not GameSpot. 4 stars for me doesn't mean average. So
I think GameSpot, 4 out of 5 is a negative review, right?
Pretty much. But for me, 4 out of 5 is a damn fine game. It's just a game that has some pretty significant flaws, which I think it did, personally. It's also another flaw that I found that it had was that it introduces the mechanics in the first 12 rooms, and then the rest of the game is the actual levels. It's the non-training part, which is a lot of training, but it's some pretty unusual mechanics, so I'm cool with that. That's not a problem. The problem that I had with it was that in the rest of the game, after those training rooms, it doesn't really come up with a whole lot of new things for you to do with the mechanics. You just have to do more things at the same time, or you have to do them from harder angles or something. Mm-hmm. There's nothing really new that it introduces, so it seemed to me when I got through Portal, when I finished it, that I was just about ready for it to be over. I wasn't really upset that it was short, because I don't know how much more of it I was really keen to be doing.
No, I agree too, which is why I don't think its shortness is at all a flaw in it.
Neither do I.
It was precisely enough game for the length of it. I mean, the worst thing in the world, anytime people complain about games being short, I just think of all the, especially shooter games, that have some completely terrible couple levels tucked in toward the end, where they're just monotonous and introduce nothing new. I actually, if anything, I think the sort of escape sequence in Portal after Chamber 19 goes on a little too long and does become a little monotonous. Where
I agree.
Like, there you are kind of just doing exactly the same thing, but, you know, I'm dropping further, or I'm climbing a taller thing or whatever. Mm-hmm.
That great big turret battle near the end. That was the key room for me, realizing that this game was about as long as it should be. Because you've done turrets before. There are turrets all over room 16, and then there are a few in 18, and then you find them here and there during the escape. And then you get this one room that has, like, I don't know, a dozen. And all you do is portal around from one little window to the other and kick them over. And it's not any harder, it just takes longer.
Yeah, that definitely isn't... You know, it took me a couple goes to actually get that. I'll admit I died on it a couple times. But, I get what you said, like, about the time you get the third one, you're like, okay, I have this, I'm not going to lose anymore.
Yeah.
But you're still doing it, so that's a little frustrating.
But that said... Did you just say the exact same thing I did?
I may have, yeah.
Excellent. But the
in other words, Portal is a mixed bag.
Yes. Overall, Portal is a mixed bag. The advanced levels that it unlocks after you beat the game, those I was really grooving. I really liked that stuff because it had kind of new things in it. It had new, harder puzzles to solve instead of just longer puzzles to solve, which I appreciated.
Yeah, actually, I only played, like, I think one of the advanced levels. The other ones, I let someone borrow my copy of the game, and I've yet to get it back. So I haven't actually played those yet. But, honestly, though, I didn't feel any huge rush to play them. I felt like, yeah, I played Portal. I got through the story and doing... And now you say that that there's actually new mechanics. So that makes me more interested. I thought it was just kind of same thing, but you had to be more precise or faster.
Well, it's certainly not new mechanics. The game only has one mechanic, which is the portal creation mechanic. That's it. That's all it has.
Well, that's kind of oversimplifying it.
Well, okay. That's arguable. But anyway, my point is, you don't gain the ability to do anything new.
I gotcha.
If you see, you don't get, like, you can't open a third type of portal that shoots cake at you or anything. So...
I mean, I would say there are, like, a couple of mechanics in Portal. Obviously, you just use them for transport. You can use them to launch yourself. You can kind of use them, like, hurl objects through. I mean, there's a couple of basic puzzle mechanics that introduces kind of slowly throughout.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But
you don't nothing new like that. No new kind of puzzle types, you're saying, or
not really. It's well, the advanced rooms are all the same as rooms 13 through 18 in the regular game, except with the stuff that makes those rooms easier to solve taken out, basically. So you'll need to flip three switches, and instead of giving you three boxes, it gives you two boxes.
I see.
And you need to figure out how to get a box on all three switches when you don't have enough boxes. That sort of situation.
Gotcha.
Or there will be a lot more surfaces that you can't put a portal on. So you need to be a lot more tricky about getting things portaled to where you can portal them. That, you know what I mean. I said that backwards.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know, the other thing, and I think this is portal raises another kind of interesting question, which we're always sort of struggling with, and that is the relationship between game and story, because I think we both, absolutely everyone on the planet loves Portal's story, and it's never really I guess it's kind of a story, mainly it's just this increasingly insane villain taunting you, which is simply, you know, like the best dialogue in any video game ever, right? I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
So the advanced rooms don't have any continuation of that, so I felt much less inclined to play them, whereas while I'm playing the game, half my motivation for getting through it is to hear what GLaDOS has to say next.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's what I found with the advanced rooms, was that they don't have that, but they replace it with more of that challenge that I was complaining was missing from the regular game. So that, in turn, provides a draw for me. It's not that I want to see or hear what GLaDOS has to say, so much as I want to see if I can solve this harder puzzle, you know? Which is definitely a different type of appeal. If the primary thing that you enjoy about playing Portal is listening to GLaDOS, then yeah, the advanced rooms have nothing to offer you. That's absolutely true.
Right. And no, I enjoyed Portal's gameplay quite a bit, but I think probably more fun for me, really, when I think about it, is GLaDOS.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think without GLaDOS, it would not have been half the game that it was.
Oh, much less. Like, it would have been an interesting little curiosity.
Which is ultimately a lot of why I keep talking about how I rated it low, but I didn't really. I just didn't give it a perfect score.
Everyone else did.
Right. And I think a lot of the problem for me is just that it does depend too strongly on the dialogue from its key NPC. Which is not really a gameplay element.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I get what you're saying, but on the other hand, it's part of the experience. You can't deny that while you're playing it, your fun is enhanced by GLaDOS.
I cannot and do not. And did not. And
so,
will not.
I mean, I don't know if that it gets penalized because it relies too heavily on its best portion. I'm not sure, but...
When the best portion, though, is not part of the gameplay... That's something that I will consider, at least, penalizing the game for.
I get you from some, like, theoretical perspective, but on the other hand, from a practical perspective, there's two there's two things. From a practical perspective, it was fun as hell listening to GLaDOS, and two, it had the best video game dialogue of all time. Of course the other parts of it aren't going to be as good as that. I mean, it is the best video game dialogue of all time. It would... pretty much need the best mechanics of all time to compete with is dialogue, so that it gets outshone there is, in my mind, more of how good the dialogue is than how poor the gameplay is.
To my thinking, it's a bit of each. Because it does certainly reflect on the quality of the dialogue, and I didn't, perhaps I was unclear when I said it, but I wasn't actually trying to imply that I was, like, rating the gameplay against the dialogue, and since it didn't keep up.
Oh, I see.
I wasn't doing that so much as the core thinking that goes into when I review a video game. How fun it is my top priority. And any game that's fun, that's a lot of fun to play, I'm not going to give a negative review to, no matter what. It's just,
I see.
It's not going to happen, and I didn't give a negative review to Portal, you'll notice.
Well, you gave it a 4, so...
Right.
On the GameSpot scale, it's quite low.
That's very true. I think that means they'll never hire me now. But, I'm not going to give it 5 stars. I'm not going to give it a perfect score unless I really don't think the game has any flaws. And Portal, I think, does have a few.
I see. Well, you know, one other thing that Portal kind of brings to mind while I was playing it is simply, why the hell aren't there more funny games?
I
just don't understand. There's comedy, like, in every other form of entertainment, and yet almost completely absent from video games.
I think, what was it, GDC this year, that Eric Wolpaw, who wrote the dialogue, gave a bit of a speech on writing for video games.
Mm.
And he mentioned that part of the reason why it's hard to write funny video game dialogue is because of the nature of the design process for video games. You write your funny dialogue, and then you hear it over and over and over again for years while this game is in development. And it goes, and I can definitely attest to this from my experience with dialogue writing, it goes from funny to seeming really, really stupid. So it's difficult and unpleasant to write funny dialogue for a video game because you just have to hear it until you can't stand hearing it anymore, but still be able to judge whether or not it's appropriately funny and or needs work.
I suppose, but if you think about it, if you're making a comedy, a film, and you spend, as a screenwriter, a couple months working on the screenplay, and then it goes through a bunch of drafts, and various people have their input on it, I mean, you've been, by the time it actually starts getting filmed, you've been living with that dialogue for, you know, years, probably. And then, if the people on set, you're the writer on set, you have to, weeks and weeks of rehearsal, and then a month or two of shooting, and then if you're the director, you're sitting in the editing room, listening to it over and over. I mean, it's not like games are unique in that regard.
That's
right,
true.
Movies have kind of a similar problem. But, you know, there's very few attempts. Like, the only other real games I can think of being funny, generally speaking, are kind of like serious games that have a little bit of humor injected in them in certain key moments. Like, I don't know, like the Fallout series has a little bit of a funny edge to it, but it's still mostly pretty serious. There are some, like, just wacky Japanese games, but...
I've played a few more games that have some decent comedy writing in them. The Ratchet and Clank games, for example.
Sure, but would you describe them as ultimately being comedy, the way Portal is clearly comedy?
They're not the same style, that's for sure, but they're definitely intended to be... At least the first few, I won't speak for the most recent, but the first few at least are definitely intended not to be taken seriously.
Everything, sure, I mean.
The villain is a comic villain, and the plot is a comic plot, and so on. I mean, they do have serious moments, but I always got the impression that they were basically comedy games, yeah.
I guess I kind of get that. You know, I think about some of Rare's games kind of fall under the same regard, but
certainly Conker.
Yeah, Conker is the what I was thinking of, and even like their N64, their other platformers like Banjo Kazooie and Donkey Kong Country were pretty silly.
But Conker's Bad Fur Day, it could be very easily argued, was all jokes and no game.
Right. And I guess maybe that's kind of what I'm thinking of, which is you kind of argue the same thing about Portal, which is there's very little game, and what, you know, we got a cool mechanic, but what everyone really responds to is the humor. I'm just curious why there aren't more games whose sort of primary function is to make you laugh.
Yeah. I think basically a lot of it might have to do with the need to balance that with some gameplay. Because I played all of Conker's Bad Fur Day when it came out on the N64. And it was funny, I enjoyed the comedy. I enjoyed the jokes. But it was, for the most part, it was kind of a just dragging my way through the game to get to the next funny cutscene. And I think that's a problem that games have that you don't have in other media. Because it's not a game if there's no player interaction, if there's nothing for the player to do. So you have to make sure that you have your funny cutscenes, but that you also have a game that's interesting enough that the players don't just totally hate.
Now allow me to offer a rebuttal. And if we replace funny with serious, moody angst, my rebuttal is the Final Fantasy series since Final Fantasy VII.
Okay.
Where there's virtually no gameplay, just a ton of movies, and you're slogging your way through really kind of mediocre RPG experience to get to more movies. And yet, for some reason, that exists in freaking spades in video games. Tons of games are like that. Yet very few do the same thing for humor.
That's fair. I don't know. I'm inclined to think a lot of that might have to do then, looking at it that way, with the fact that so many video games, and certainly so many high-profile video games, are Japanese.
Mm.
And humor does not translate as well.
True.
From the one language and the one culture into another language and another culture, as does, you know, moody, gloomy, serious bullshit.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, like, when you get, like, a game, like, whatever the hell Elite Beat Agents was called in Japan... Right, they have to completely change it. That's a comedy game, but
they have
to completely change it to bring it over to America because no one would ever understand whatever. I don't even really understand what the joke was.
I own the game, and I don't really understand what it was.
You own the Japanese version?
No, I own the English version.
Oh, okay.
And I do not understand what the hell is going on in this game, but it is funny. It does still manage to be funny.
It is kind of funny. The Japanese version is like completely different in terms of story and everything. Like, instead of men in black, you're male cheerleaders.
Oh, really?
Which, apparently that's some cultural thing in Japan that, like, they just assume nobody in America would get.
I'd probably still laugh at it, but no, I wouldn't have gotten it.
Yeah. So, like I said, I don't understand. I'm trying to explain it. I have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. But I do remember seeing, like reviews of it and stuff when it came out in Japan. People go like, yeah, this game is insane, but there's no way it can ever come out here. And so, I guess it didn't. I mean, it kind of did, but... They just got changed everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, just... I feel like the American game industry needs to lighten up a little bit. It's a little just too serious all the damn time.
I think that's fair.
I like... You know, and maybe it's just because I've read the entire Old Man Murray archive too many times, but...
Is there such a thing?
No. But, you know, when you, I always remember their... the review of No One Lives Forever, where they were just shocked to find a game that had bright colors. It was like one of their phrases was something like, you know, the video game developers realized that the same technology they used to render dark sewers could also render outdoor scenes in the daylight.
Yeah.
And, you know, No One Lives Forever is a good example. I actually have a game that is very, very goofy and funny pretty much the whole way through. It's kind of a James Bond parody, like an Austin Powers type thing all the way through. And it's also happens to be, by the way, bright and funny and a lot of fun to play. I just feel like... And it is funny, of course, Old Man Murray, Eric, wrote Portal, and it's hilarious and doesn't take place in a sewer. So, though it is kind of not a lot of bright colors in the Portal. I guess he didn't get to pick the look of the game.
Yeah, he only did the writing, unfortunately.
But like, I do feel like they had a great point. I really enjoyed playing No One Lives Forever because it contained stuff I hadn't done a million times, and it was funny and... Same thing about Portal, and I just feel like, we gotta get away from this constant seriousness where you're some badass loner.
Yeah.
And you gotta do some stupid quest for whatever purpose. I mean, come on, lighten up a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you completely there. I think that we went through this long period in the late 90s and through the early 21st century where video games were just, like, competing with each other to see which could be the gloomiest and the darkest and the most serious and heady and sinister, and I found that really tiresome, personally.
Yeah.
I mean, there are certainly situations in which doing something like that, doing something moody and dark, is appropriate. I mean, I don't think I would want to play a Castlevania game that was, you know, silly and bright and cheery. That would just be bizarre. It's a gothic horror series.
Sure.
But there's... So basically what I'm getting at is that I don't think that dark and serious sort of ambiance is necessarily bad in and of itself. It's just that it got totally overused. It's just like going into the mid-90s, the platform game. It had been... I love platformers, but they were basically all the games that anybody ever made for 10 years. And so into the late 90s, and even up until today, really, they've really dropped off.
Mm-hmm.
People just don't make a lot of platformers anymore, and I think that's largely because the market just got overwhelmed with them.
Yeah, well, that and also the switch over to 3D ruined everything. Yeah. And you know what, I'm thinking about my comments, maybe a little unfair. I think it's more kind of confined to the types of games that I personally play, which is sort of more American role-playing games and first-person shooters and games that are popular in America and nowhere else, basically. And those just tend to be nothing but dark, moody, whatever.
To say nothing of Madden.
Yeah, I don't actually play Madden, though, so...
Really?
No, I watch my brother play it. I don't know nearly enough about football to actually handle
coaching an NFL team.
No, I watch my brother play it.
My bad, then.
It's different.
No, I believe you. I believe you.
I was for a brief period of time into one of the NFL 2K games. But there's only one I was playing with my brother, and he could call all the plays for me. And
see.
He would just be like, okay, look, you're going to be the running back. This is a running play. I'm like, yes. But he'd be like, this is a passing play. You don't have anything to do. I'm like, okay. I'll block.
Kind of like...
And then sometimes, on important plays, he would take control of it from me so that, you know, I couldn't screw it up too badly.
I imagine that's kind of like the experience that Hammerack has when we tank something together.
Yeah, probably.
But, yeah, I could definitely see that being an issue. The games that I tend to play, like, the exact games that you don't play.
Mm-hmm.
I like the sillier, lighter sort of jumping games, and not so much the shooters and the simulations. And so I get more of the bright and sunny and cheery game thing, whereas you get more of the more serious games.
Right. But see, my problem is I don't like the atmosphere of those games. I like their gameplay better. I love No One Lives Forever is high on it's on my top 5 list of favorite shooters. I love shooters, but every fucking shooter game in the world is me in some post-apocalyptic environment or demons from hell. And as much as I love Gears of War, I played it again not too recently. Or not too long ago, rather, and a great game. But slogging through dark corridor after dark corridor after dark freaking ruined corridor, it's so old.
Yeah. And that's one thing I like. I mean, my list of favorite shooters, if I were to pick a top 5 favorite shooters, would probably just be, like, the Half-Life games and Metroid Prime.
Wow, yeah, bright and sunny all the way through.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it. They're all the same. They're all the same sort of ruins and
yep.
Narrow confines and post-apocalyptic this and that, with the exception of that one level of the first Half-Life that takes place on the outside of the base, where it's too bright to look at the screen. But except for that, and
to be fair, Half-Life 2 has some bright, sunny, like the section where you're on the road.
Yeah. And that's where I was going with this, is that all of those games, all the Half-Life games and Metroid Prime, at least if they don't have, you know, cheery, happy environments, they at least have varied environments. You don't spend the whole game in, you know, a sewer.
Right.
And the variety is nice, even if it's only variety of specific location and not variety of theme.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it would be nice, first-person shooter developers, maybe you guys could make No One Lives Forever 3 someday. I don't know if that's a possibility, but... You know, where you, like, go into space and stuff, and space looks like a James Bond from the 1970s spaceship, and not like the System Shock 2 spaceship of death.
Maybe we could start a collection, take some donations, pool all of our internet money, and contact Jason Hall and offer to hire him to make another No One Lives Forever game.
We would have to pay him entirely in protein powder.
We can do this. There's a GNC down at the mall here. I could hook this up.
Does Monolith still exist? Do they still make games?
My understanding... I read something about them just a little while ago. I think they got bought by one of the major third-party houses, but that was a while after Jason Hall left the company, actually.
Ah, I see.
So I don't really know what they're up to these days. I think they might be making, you know, cell phone games. All things.
That seems to be the hot thing. I got the new iPhone.
Oh, did you?
And I keep meaning to download Monkey Ball for it and see how that works out. It seems like a pretty nifty thing.
You got the new iPhone, the one that's only $300?
Yeah, the one I had to stand in line for to get this weekend.
Oh, you just got it then.
It came out on Friday, so I just got it.
Oh, did it?
Oh, yes, it did.
I'm not really up on the phone market since I'm sort of a Luddite.
Do you actually own a portable telephone yet?
I do not, in fact.
Why would you?
Pretty much. I don't use the non-portable telephone. I don't really need it following me around and so I can not answer it then.
Yeah, but you could play Monkey Ball on it.
See, this is true, but I could also play Monkey Ball on the DS. So...
Oh, hey, apparently Monolith still does make video games. I just checked Wikipedia.
Excellent.
They made The Matrix Online, for instance.
Oh, did they? Well, that's a high-quality piece of work.
I bet that involves a whole lot of sewers.
You know, I'd expect so. But they'd be virtual sewers.
Ah, and they do the Fear series, which does also involve sewers. I have played that.
All right, then.
It involves sewers and survival horror and first-person shooter.
Yep, that's pretty much sums up the entire American development scene, doesn't it?
Unfortunately. All right, so I think that does it for me for tonight, unless you want to get into that Sonic versus Mario debate again.
Well, see, here's the thing. Sonic had brighter colors, but Mario had a better game.
A much, much better game, by the way.
So which one's more important to you? Is it more important to you that you have that your processor is getting blasted, or is it more important to you that, you know, you have a game to play? Which one is your priority?
Well, Mario had more Yoshis.
Mario, in fact, it had many colors of Yoshi.
That's right.
Sonic the Hedgehog, if I remember correctly, only had one color of Yoshi.
And that color's probably blue.
It was.
So yeah, I'm going to go with Super Mario World for many colors of Yoshis.
All right, I also agree. So I guess we've settled that age-old question.
Excellent. Excellent.
Next time anyway, I guess we'll have to cover which version of Earthworm Jim was better.
Ooh, well, that's one for the ages.
It is. But I think we should leave that for the ages for the time being, at least.